Everybody, this is William Del Pilar, and this is the Red, White, and Rude, where politics is downstream of pop culture, and I bring it all together. Thank you for tuning in, my friends. Do not forget to like, share, and subscribe to our videos, our podcast. Happy holidays, everybody. Merry Christmas to literally 90% of the country, and thank you for tuning in. You know, as a businessman, we always did the happy holidays to respect our non-Christian friends. But the truth of the matter is, I was wrong. I should have just said Merry Christmas. I have learned my lesson. But at the same time, being respectful is not a bad thing. Being politically correct is not a good thing. And I was trying to be respectful and polite, not politically correct. So I gave myself a little leeway, but now it's Merry Christmas to all. We've got a great show tonight. We are going to talk about what America is talking about in an episode I call The Great New Jersey Drone, Who Done It? High flying hijinks and hysteria. Then we're going to move on to something that irritates me every year when I see it. Wikipedia's festive fund begging, milking Christmas cheer for a misinformation monopoly. Then we're going to talk a little Hollywood, middle age crisis, Malcolm returns to the madness in reference to Malcolm in the Middle. And we're going to close it out with a show that was arguably one of the most popular in these United States of America for its wholesomeness, its traditional television. In terms it always had, or 99.9% of the time had a happy ending. And that is Blue Bloods Farewell, a heartfelt goodbye to family and legacy. All right, my friends, let's get down to it. Let's talk some mystery drones over New Jersey and what we know. Okay, in recent months, the skies over New Jersey have become the stage for an intriguing, I say again, intriguing mystery that has captivated residents, officials, and the media. I don't want to say captivated as much as created hysteria in many cases. Unidentified drones have been sighted across the state and beyond, to be quite honest, and this sparked a whirlwind of theories, speculations, and concerns, from near military installations to President-elect Donald Trump's golf course. These nocturnal flights have raised questions about their purpose, their origins, and the potential implications. So let's delve into the details of these sightings, the official responses, and the various theories surrounding them that attempt to explain this high-flying enigma. And I've settled in on one, my friends, that I believe is true. However, first of all, let me share my screen here with you, my good friends, and let's look at two videos. Now, before I do this, there's so many videos out there, it's hard to tell what's real and what isn't real. So take this with a grain of salt. It's what I could find, what I believe is accurate. But I do give myself, again, a little leeway in the sense maybe it's not. But there is legit video out there, and I believe this is one of them. Looks like Christmas lights, to be quite frank, but look at that. Those are drones, they're saying. That one's flashing really bright there, huh? Look at that. It's pretty, pretty, very pretty, beautiful. And it looks like it's about 31 seconds, this video. But as you can see, that's a great shot there. Great video taken there for that one. So, wow. They're saying that they're about the size of an SUV, these drones. Let me show you another one. Actually, here's one from a home. And again, there are hundreds of videos out there. At first, when these first came out, people laughed about them, but now they're not laughing. So as you can see, this one's over the house. You know, the thing is back in the day before video, people would laugh at these individuals who they said were making up stories or seeing things, but not anymore. Not anymore. Not in this day and age of mobile phone videos. There's another one. It's another great shot, you know, and that one looks like a drone there. There's no ifs, ands, or buts in terms of how that one looks. And it's not a UFO. For those of you out there thinking, I mean, I guess technically it is an unidentified flying object or a unidentified aerial phenomena. So I guess technically it is. So those are two videos there. The sightings were first reported November 18, 2023, near Morris County, New Jersey. And since then, there have been widespread reports across New Jersey, other East Coast states. And obviously, these sightings have sparked concern. Speculation. What are their origins? What are their purpose? Will they initiate contact? Again, I'm on the UFO kick. Sorry. They are drones. Sightings have continued almost nightly, except for Thanksgiving. It was a day of giving, I guess, even for the drones. So the drones have been spotted near military installations, the Raritan River, the Round Valley Reservoir, and even over President-elect Donald Trump's golf course in Bedminster. Sightings span, again, from New Jersey, with some in New York and Pennsylvania. So there have been, gosh, over 180 sightings in a single night. I mean, just this past few days, there's been over 80. So there's no denying there is something up there. Now, these drones are described as commercial-grade equipment up to 6 feet in diameter, capable of quickly switching from emitting light to complete darkness, and they're able to evade detection. And some accounts suggest they resemble small SUVs in size, they fly in clusters, and they can move without lights. Again, drones. I've never heard of a drone at night, but then again, it's. I'm not in the drone field or the drone world, so I don't know. So what are some of the official responses and investigations here? Well, the FBI. Dear God. The FBI. I'm sorry. There's federal investigations. One group is the FBI that's leading the investigation. And they've received 1,000 tips. They see it themselves. And they tell us they don't know what it is. Then there's the FAA action. The FAA issued temporary flight restrictions over Picatinny Arsenal and Trump National Golf Club, as if the drones are going to listen. President Biden has been briefed on the situation. I'm sure President Trump has too. I was going to say President-elect, but technically he was number 45. Government statements. Now, officials, including those from the FBI, FAA, DHS, and DOD, are stating, hey, there's no evidence here, people, to suggest the drones pose a national security threat or are linked to foreign actors. And one congressman said they're from the mothership off the coast of New York called Iran, saying Iran has a mothership and they're flying them off. Honestly, if there was a ship out there that was Iranian, our own drones, even civilians would have gone out there looking for it and detected it. The issue I have here is what leads to my belief that this is not alien, this is not a foreign government, that it's American. It's a secret project. We'll get into that here in a moment. But some of the White House statements, the National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby, who's a loser for all intents and purposes, seems like a very nice guy, but he's a loser, a career bureaucrat who's willing to lie in our face as he has over and over and over. And he states there's no evidence of a national security threat or foreign involvement. Listen. If there's something in our skies, we don't know what it is, it's not supposed to be in our skies, then it's a potential threat. And the White House is downplaying the threat, suggesting many sightings might be lawful manned aircraft. I believe they are finally telling the truth there. They just don't want to tell us what kind of lawful manned aircraft. The governor's remark, Governor Phil Murphy, an idiot. I'm sorry, that's my personal opinion. He stated there's no known public safety risk. That's an idiotic statement. There's no known. Well, I guess technically he's right. We don't know what kind of risk it is, but there is a risk here, Phil. So he has been vocal for the need of federal agencies to provide some clarity. So I apologize, Governor Phil. You're not being an idiot here, but you're just an idiot overall. So lawmaker reactions. Some politicians have expressed alarm. A lot of them have, actually. They're jumping on the bandwagon. They see America getting nervous. Hey, let me get nervous with them. I'll seem like the outsider. The mini Trump. Yeah, so they've expressed alarm over security implications. Now, some of them are saying, shoot it down, shoot it down. Now, there's danger to that. It could be over housing, but if it's over a field, they say, bam, shoot it down is what I say. Senator Richard Blumenthal, now he is an idiot. has been particularly vocal about the need for aggressive action. Let me think. Is he the one who I think he is? Yes, he is. Senator Richard Blumenthal has been particularly vocal about the need for aggressive action. I wonder if he's talking about the same aggressive action he saw when he was in Vietnam, as he claimed he was, but really wasn't. I just can't help but take my dig. The fact that Connecticut, I don't know what it is, Connecticut people are idiots to have reelected a liar, an elitist, somebody who's only out for himself and his party, and just flat out lied, and y'all went ahead and reelected him. Y'all have no shame. No shame. All right, so what are some of the theories and speculations concerning these technically UAPs? Well, government operations. This is where I come in. Some experts believe that drones could be part of a U.S. government operation, especially given their proximity to military bases right next to it. They can come and go, come and go. They can refuel or recharge, however they're powered up. Maybe they were used for surveillance or other classified activities. That's what I think. We're going to get into specifically what I think. I've seen two people talk about this. Then there's commercial and criminal activity. Other theories propose that drones could be commercially available models used for illicit activities such as contraband drops. I don't know about that one. I mean, these drones might be operated at short range and could be involved in criminal enterprises. I don't think so. Because if you're a criminal, you kind of want to be on the down low. Like Latinos and blacks who were gay were on the down low. I mock that because those individuals claim, I'm not gay, I'm not gay. I'm just on the down low. I remember reading and studying by that. Sorry, I can't. Every time I say the term down low, I think of that. Oh, cultural and machismo. It just cracks me up. Anyway, again, military security operations, that the military is using this. However, I bring that up because the Pentagon has denied involvement. They're saying, no, there's no connection to U.S. military activities or foreign threats with these drones. Oh, we don't know what it is. It's not us. Okay, not. Commercial or research drones. Some people believe that they could be commercial-grade drones again, perhaps involved in infrastructure checks, agriculture monitoring, or environmental studies. Are you kidding me? At night like this? That's the type of stuff you said. Yeah, we're going to be doing this. We have permission from the government to do it. But you don't have permission from the government in terms of what they publicly said, and you're doing this only at night. And why would this be so secret? So as you can see, none of these explanations are viable except for the one of government or military secret operations or security operations. Now, I have seen this twice. And in fact, let me pop it up here. I want to give the person his due here. Well, I wanted to give him his due, but there's two individuals out there on X. I couldn't find it, and I should have said it. I apologize to those two individuals. One works for a drone agency, drone company, and the other one said, hey, this post is going to be buried. I only have X amount of followers. He had low count followers, and he was saying that he was telling us the truth, and he didn't know how long the post would last. But we did find a possibility. One, we do believe that this is a strong possibility of what the drones are. They are dropping food off to Governor Christie, former Governor Christie. Sorry, people. I could not resist. Anyway, back to these individuals. So it's a dirty bomb detection drones is what they're saying. So one of the most plausible scenarios, and I believe this one. Look, in the past, governments have done secret testing like this, not specifically like this, but you know, doing a lot of flying at night. People see it, they say, hey, oh, I saw this UFO. They were happy with that because that took attention away from the secret project. We now live in an era where that's next to impossible. So I believe that these two explanations that come out and talk about these drones from this perspective, that they're drones being used to detect and sniff out dirty bombs, including gamma radiation and other hazardous materials. And this technology is increasingly being developed, and it's being deployed by companies and individuals specializing in drone technology. So to me, this is, if it's done by a civilian company, it's being done in conjunction with the government to test this. Look, I keep telling people, we are in the era, I've been saying this for years, we are in the era where eventually dirty bombs will proliferate throughout the world. I'm not talking about thousands and thousands, but you know, a handful here, a handful there, and cities across the world, great urban areas, whether London, Paris, New York City, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Boston, Tokyo, Hong Kong, Dubai, Tehran, doesn't matter. You have an enemy and they get their hands on a dirty bomb, no city is safe. And what they're saying is, it's something called Gamma Pix technology that enables unmodified digital cameras to detect radioactive materials. And that could be integrated with drones. And the Idaho National Laboratory has been testing drones carrying up to 20 pounds of explosive to simulate dirty bomb scenarios. And drones are being used to test radiological dispersal from simulated dirty bomb detonations. This could all be testing. Advanced drone technology, recent advancements in drone technology such as Cobra Jet by Sky Defense, that highlights the capabilities of drones to detect, track, and neutralize threats with precision and speed. You think there's a dirty bomb? Think of any television episode where the good guy 24 only has X amount of time to find it. That's why maybe this could be a scenario where they're testing that. So these drones are equipped with sophisticated sensors and AI-assisted systems. Now, I'm not too keen on the AI-assisted systems as I think that's still in its infancy era, but maybe they have them further along than what we see in the public. However, this does seem like something that could be capable in terms of being used to detect these threats in the future. Some people believe on X, actually, that it could be from the US Space Command designed to detect gamma radiation, potentially from stolen radioactive materials. One of the videos I saw was from somebody who does own a drone company, says that they're worried about stuff coming through Ukraine, that somebody did see a radioactive dirty bomb of sorts there. But as always, these claims should be treated with caution due to the lack of official corroboration and evidence. The key point being evidence. So the technical feasibility, well, drones are equipped with sensors for detecting gamma radiation do exist, but their deployment in widespread, visible manner for this specific purpose, that's not normal. And as you can see by the hysteria, you can tell it's not normal. So no official or credible source has confirmed this scenario, as we already know. So some of the scenarios they want you to believe the government does, it's misidentification or over-reporting, that they're advanced commercial drones, and that they're security or law enforcement tests. Some of those are legit, but the misidentification or over-reporting, I guess all of those scenarios could be true or are true. I take that back. I say they are true. Now, another scenario. And hey, before I go on here, they've been saying that today's conspiracy theorist is tomorrow's truth teller. And we've been right with the Russia hoax, with the Russia killing soldiers for bounties, with literally everything to do with politics in the last 6 years, since 2015 at least. But here's one that they're saying that the government may be doing this to create hysteria and to implement regulations to take away the use of airspace by drones by civilians. It's not out of the realm. I don't know how true it is. I have not considered that one, but you must. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but hey, the United States government told us 6 feet was science in terms of COVID separation. Turned out they lied. Fauci said AZT was a drug for those who were dying of AIDS to use. The drug was killing them faster than AIDS was. We tested drugs in Muskogee. So don't ever put anything past the government. So, as a mystery, excuse me, as a mystery of these drones over New Jersey continues to unfold, there is speculation surrounding their purposes, their origins, and it's only going to grow. Again, I've given you plenty of theories, government, criminal, other dramatic scenarios. We don't know. I believe it's maybe the most logical one to me. Sounds like it could be a system they're testing to detect dirty bombs. Sounds as good as any. And no official investigation is being done to our knowledge that we know of, even though people have talked about it. And everybody's going through a bit of hysteria who live in that area. And until they get an explanation, They will not have clarity and peace of mind, nor peace of mind. So until then, the explanation that is, that makes us happy. The skies over New Jersey will remain a focal point of curiosity and concern. Why? Well, the mystery of the New Jersey drones will continue to fold without an answer. And until we get one, we won't be happy or satisfied. Okay, let us move on. Here's one that really bugs the hell out of me. I see it every year. I call this one Wikipedia's festive fund begging, milking Christmas cheer for a misinformation monopoly. Excuse me one second. I apologize. My throat. Woo! I tell you. So here's one that does bug me. Again, let's talk about why you shouldn't support Wikipedia, especially if you're conservative. But everybody, nobody should be supporting Wikipedia right now. And why? Well, they are bashing the misinformation. I'm trying to bring the screen up here as I talk. You go to their site and you see this ad and others like it in similar format, depending on what browser you're using or how many times you've been on there. But this one here is from December 15th. Wikipedia still can't be sold. We're holding strong. We're not going to sell out to anybody. So they keep asking for money. And as you see, December 15th, they're at it again. They're trolling for donations. They're trying to grift out the holiday spirit of Christmas. And that's a time now seen by Wikipedia's founders, 99.9% of their editors, and progressives. It's an Anglo-conservative tradition. They demagogue, they claim as racist, they just hate it. Yet they're using it here, Wikipedia, to grift. So Wikipedia uses this time to fundraise to keep their platform free and independent, while in reality, they're just raising money to perpetuate an attack on the very same people who celebrate this holiday. And it's not just the conservatives, but in general, everyone, as there's always two sides. And when haters have access to edit anything, they're more than likely to lie, as we've seen since the creation of Wikipedia. And what I mean that everybody should be like this in terms of my attitude, it's if you're a Conor McGregor fan, his haters are going to be on there twisting the truth. If you're a Stephen A. Smith fan, his haters are going to be on there twisting the truth. Caitlin Clark, any controversy out there, it's going to have a progressive leftist slant because that's who controls the editing. And they lock conservatives out. Some pages have purposely locked specific people because they're conservative. And to me, it's just the truth. Get the truth up there. But they don't want the truth up there. So let's dive into why supporting Wikipedia might just be supporting your own ideological undermining. So the battle over biography pages is what I have alluded to. There's common issues like vandalism. The platform's open editing system leaves it open to vandalism. And that vandalism affects information accuracy. That's what the vandalism is. It's information accuracy or the lack of bias and control, conflicts of interest. Political figures, pages, those are battlegrounds for narrative control. And there's ethical concerns about neutrality because there is none. Here's some specific examples. Barack Hussein Obama edits during his campaign about softening, making it not as racist as it was, his association with Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who is a complete full-blown racist. They're okay with Obama going to that to that church. Imagine if Trump had gone to the David Duke church. Reverend Wright is the equivalent of David Duke. Then there was the achievements and the lies regarding Obamacare itself, and on and on and on. Everything is lies. They've lied about what he accomplished, how he accomplished it. They've lied about how he was attacked. His page is a complete lie in terms of the truth. You can't trust that page. Hillary Clinton's another one. When she was running, they downplayed her Iraq war vote. They minimized her email controversy. Just like Obama, everything's been downplayed. Everything she's done has been uplifted to mythical proportions. That really isn't how it happened. Bernie Sanders, They edited his biography to focus on his progressive policies, and they countered criticism, meaning they gave cover to his stance on gun control. And as Republicans do it too. Sarah Palin was busted, her campaign associates going aiming to polish up her image during her VP run. And the process of correcting this misinformation, it's very complex because Wikipedia has complex rules. It makes it hard for conservative counter viewpoints to counteract these misinformation lies. Speaking of misinformation and bias. So Wikipedia, you always hear, don't trust Wikipedia. But at the end of the day, 90% of our research is coming from Wikipedia, or most people's research. I can't tell you, when I research all these stories, I don't really go to Wikipedia, to be quite honest. I do for certain ones because they're neutral, meaning there's no controversy surrounding them. But it is seen as an authoritative source, whether it should be or shouldn't be, and it shouldn't be. And it shouldn't be because that's where misinformation thrives. Again, political figures and how they're portrayed. So studies show an increase in negative bias coverage of conservative media in Wikipedia since 2000. A lot of times, just like the papers, you'll see unnamed sources when they're supposed to be named, meaning they won't say, I apologize, they won't say unnamed sources, but they'll have information in there that isn't source and it's supposed to be source. A 2023 study by the University of Rochester found media bias against conservatives has grown, with misinformation often originating from unnamed sources. So I guess let me go back one step. What I'm trying to say is this. The New York Times will sit there and say, Trump is a racist. Our unnamed sources have verified him saying this, this, or this. So in Wikipedia, they'll go, well, Trump is a racist as he has said the N-word, or has said this, or has said that, which is not true. But they're sourcing that New York Times article. So it goes from pure speculation from an unnamed source that turns out to be nothing but lies into being seen, perceived as fact, because now it's on Wikipedia. A 2024 Offside study noted that for every correct article, there could be 50 to 100 articles promoting misinformation, particularly from major outlets. And again, when you're on Wikipedia and you're sourcing it, you're sourcing these articles that are nothing but misinformation. It's like a circle jerk. Excuse my French there. A great example, hands up, don't shoot. That was a lie, that whole narrative. After the Michael Brown shooting, it caused riots. Outsiders went in there to create riots. The leftist news media ran there lying about him. Rachel Maddow, man, he went off on it. And that guy sat there and just, hands up, don't shoot. That man's a demon. Rachel Maddow should be canceled. Again, widely disseminated despite being debunked later. And it should have been debunked immediately. And it shows how misinformation can persist and remain in the public limelight. Some specifics. The Russia hoax for Trump. That made it to Wikipedia. It heavily emphasized that narrative with no context or the lack of evidence for collusion. Now, some of these may have changed. You know, but I save pages, I save, and I do deep research. I go to the cached, you know, where it used to be called Wayback Machine. I don't know if it's still around, but information sources like that. So, so that is one. Then there was a Charlottesville one. That's another one they put on there. You know, I got in an argument with this, what is his name? Oh, man. Let me find it here real quick. Hold on one second. I got it right. I can't find it. We got an argument where he was talking about Charlottesville, and I even showed him the Snopes. And this guy's a professor of law. I'm a professor of journalism, teaches journalism. He deleted his tweets. I mean, their post, the truth was there. But again, Wikipedia, misinformation. Barack Obama, remember, you can keep your doctor. Well, they played that up. And then they said it was misinformation. There are corrections in there now stating that. It was an oversimplification that people made it out to be. And not all individuals, is what he meant, could retain their doctors. So it's presented as a misunderstanding. The cages for illegals, you know, they're saying that After months of knowing that the facilities in question, particularly those used for unaccompanied minors, were constructed or expanded under Obama, once the truth came out, Wikipedia took it to another level by arguing that calling them cages is inflammatory or misleading, and Obama would never pretty much do that. Chain link fence enclosures. And again, as I tell people, it's not just politics. Conor McGregor, following his arrest in 2018, they threw it all up there on Wikipedia without the citations, including court documents, news reports, and statements that there were other parties involved. They took it out of context to paint him in a negative light. So why support Wikipedia despite these issues? Don't. There is no reason to support it. It's biased in information. It leans left. It's challenging to correct that misinformation. And everything aligns with progressive viewpoints. If you donate on the precipice, I'll donate if you change, if you reform. Well, let them reform first. Now, why is Wikipedia able to get away with all these lies? Well, Section 230. That's their legal shield. Section 230 is part of the U.S. law called the Communications Decency Act. It's like a shield for websites. This is at the forefront of battle to take down social media platforms or make them accountable, rather. Not take them down, but make them accountable. It's like a shield for website. It protects from being sued over what people write or post on their platforms. This is a theory. Imagine if you went to a dinner party at someone's house and the guest said something offensive. You wouldn't blame the host for what was said. Section 230 works in the same way. Here's a specific part that you that there's issues with that they use. Subsection C1. This part of the law says that websites aren't the publisher or speaker of things or users post. So again, using an example, if someone posts something false or harmful on a site like Wikipedia, the site itself can't be sued for that content. Again, like being at a party, they're not responsible for what the guests say at the party. Then there is Section C2, which allows websites to moderate or remove content they think is bad or inappropriate without losing their legal protection. So what they're saying is we're removing hateful content. Anything conservative since 2015 has been deemed bad or inappropriate. That's what they hide under. Think of it like a host who has a right to ask a disruptive guest to leave the party or to tone down their behavior. They're saying this falls under that. A platform can decide to delete, block, or edit user content without getting into legal trouble for doing so. So what they're doing is they're participating in election interference while saying they aren't, that they're just cleaning up hateful or bad or inappropriate content under subsection C2. That's what they've been hiding behind. And what irks me is the courts will protect them when it's blatant election interference by completely censoring conservatives as Facebook has done over and over and over, and as Twitter, now known as X, did under Jack Dorsey. That's election interference. Hunter Biden laptop, election interference. Throwing Trump off, election interference. Wayne, it's a private organization. No, it's not. It's public organization, not by government, but it's public shares, publicly traded. I asked a lawyer about that. He goes, William, that's really never been tested to my knowledge. Well, look for every angle. So what I'm trying to say is, what happens when platforms, or what I'm asking is, what happens when platforms begin to censor the posts on their sites? Well, I say that when platforms actively moderate content, they're stepping beyond their role as neutral hosts, and they become publishers. Now this subsection C2 allows these platforms to remove the content that's inappropriate, deemed inappropriate in good faith. See, I'm saying they're not removing it in good faith. They're removing an opposing political voice to the ideology they want to see represented in government. Election interference. 2016-2020 election. The crux of my criticism and others is that the platforms are using Section 230 to shield themselves from the liability while simultaneously acting as gatekeepers. Obviously, gatekeepers of information. And that raises the question about accountability, fairness, and the neutrality of these platforms. They're not neutral. So what is the future of Section 230? Well, there's a lot of talk about changing it or even getting rid of Section 230 because some people think it lets websites off the hook too easily for harmful content like misinformation, which we've seen over and over and over. Think COVID-19, how Twitter at the time was throwing everybody off who disagreed, who now we are being proven correct. They deem the correct and true information as harmful content. They called it misinformation. They called it hate speech. I don't believe it should be removed. I believe it should be heavily tweaked. So, Democrats kind of want this too, but they want to control it, is what it is. The Democrat approach to more accountability, control over content. They define harmful content. They determine what is platform responsibility. They have government oversight. It's less focus on neutrality. Instead, focusing on what they deem, not the law or constitution deems, as hate speech, misinformation, and promoting equity. And that's what leads to actual bias. And we've already seen that over and over. That's the Democrat approach. The conservative approach, here's what we want. We just want a neutral platform. We want political neutrality. We want smaller immunities, meaning less immunity from being taken to court, reducing the broad protections that it currently has, to encourage competition for market-driven solutions that promotes competition. Instead, these companies are protected. They get larger, larger, and larger, makes it harder for smaller entities to enter the market. And then once it gets regulated, which is what they want to do, it won't be a snowball's chance in hell that we'll get more social media platforms. We want transparency. The ability to appeal when we have been taken down. We're against government overreach. And we do want to challenge the government and the broad definitions of harmful content. Why should a leftist determine what's harmful content? And we've seen what they've determined as harmful content as being true. If these changes are made, websites won't be on their toes. Websites will just have to do their job in a fair manner. Wikipedia would likely cease to exist or become one-tenth the size of it is right now, especially the fact it's stealing a lot of information. So let's get back to Wikipedia's fundraising campaigns. Gifts, the grift is normal at Christmas time. They do this every year, and it's smart marketing. You know, get people while they're in a given mood. Again, why shouldn't we support Wikipedia? Misinformation over historical accuracy, bias in information. Again, multiple studies, including from the University of Rochester. That was recent, 2023, and AllSides, 2024. Show the bias, not in Wikipedia, but in mainstream media, and which is what Wikipedia uses as its resource to show. See, this is true. It was written on at Mother Jones. I would not look at towards Mother Jones to get any information about a conservative. The difficulty in corrections, next impossible to correct. Mark Levin, he can't get into his page. He can't get anybody there to correct that. And he sent them notes early on. Hey, this is wrong, this is wrong. Here's the proof, here's the proof, here's the proof. They didn't change anything. I guarantee you, they get sued, they hear from Mark Levin's lawyers, they will have somebody on there reviewing his page. There is no accountability of these platforms. And there's obviously the ethical concerns. So, from a conservative viewpoint, do not financially support Wikipedia until we see substantial reform. We conservatives are frequently attacked. Our pages are lied about with misinformation. It's not just politics. It's across all industries, promoting a narrative that manipulates public perception. That's what Wikipedia does through unchecked misinformation. This model, all it does is foster misinformation and bias. And that does not align with the values of accuracy, fairness, and neutrality, which is what we want. So until they do that, my friends, don't give them a damn dime. Okay, let's move on. Let's kind of close the show out with a couple of stories here. In fact, I have actually never watched this show myself, to be quite honest, but it seems to have developed a little bit of a cult following. And that is Malcolm in the Middle, Middle Age Crisis. Malcolm returns to the madness. So Malcolm in the Middle is making a comeback. They are going to have a 4-episode revival on Disney Plus. And it's been 18 years since it went off the air. 18. Wow. And it had a big star on there. So the show was renowned for its storytelling, humor, and relatable family dynamics. So this is my research. I never watched it, but I do recognize the fact it was on when I was still watching a lot of television. Well, not a lot, but I was watching television, network television, more often than not. Cable was still going strong. This was at the turn of the century, early 2000s. And it's unique storytelling, it's unique humor, it's relatability to the family dynamics. That's what supposedly set it apart from contemporaries. So let me give you a detailed breakdown on this revival. Let me give you a picture of how the cast looked then. Well, I just did, but let me give you another one. So it was Malcolm in the Middle. So you have this guy here and this guy here. He's still acting. He's not. No, I don't know what he's doing. This is Dewey. I do remember the name Dewey. It's so unique. He's no longer acting. And there's Malcolm right there. So there are four kids. Usually when you think of someone in the middle, you think of three, but two older brothers, younger brother, Malcolm in the Middle. That's Jane Krasinski. And I think she was married to the redheaded guy from the West Wing. Hasn't done much since then. And superstar Bryan Cranston and television superstar, theater character actor. But on television, obviously, Breaking Bad. We'll get into that in a second. But so the revival announcement, Disney Plus has ordered 4 new episodes of Malcolm in the Middle, marking the revival of the series 18 years after its finale in 2006. Here's who said they are coming back. Frankie Muniz, that's him right here. Okay, there. Bryan Cranston, and he's actually excited about it. I don't think this is a money grab. I mean, most people who once they did something like he did, has done with Breaking Bad, they don't go back to shows like this, which are seen in a lesser viewpoint. Then Jane Kaczmarek is how I think you say it. She returns. So Cranston and Kaczmarek are the parents, and Muniz is the Malcolm is Malcolm, Malcolm in the Middle. So the storyline will revolve around, oops, hold on, will revolve around Malcolm, his daughter, 18 years, his daughter being pulled back into the family chaos for Hal and Lois's 40th wedding anniversary. One of those things is a 40th, you better come, and they guilt trip him into coming. So historical context of the show. The original series earned 33 Emmy nominations. That's not chump change, and it won 7. And it also secured a Grammy for its theme song, Boss of Me, by They Might Be Giants. So there's significant fan and media excitement, so the reports say. I don't know. And they're praising it for capturing the humor and relatability of family life and want to see it again on the screen. So the production details, so apart from the returning actors I mentioned, no information is given on when and who will direct or write these episodes or any other production aspects, like new characters, guest stars, or if any of the other children will return. And I imagine they will. They just got to work the details out. And there's no mention how this revival fits into Disney Plus's content strategy. That's a report. But I'm going to tell you, there is a way it fits. They're desperate for a hit that's not Star Wars or Marvel, that's costing them $10 zillion per episode to do, and it's a failure, and they cancel it. So they want some hits outside of their current batch of failures. Who thought anybody could bleep up Star Wars or Marvel stories? But give it to Disney Plus. You go woke, you go broke, especially at the cost of some of those shows. So let's look back at the past of Malcolm in the Middle. The early season ratings, its first season was in 2000, 2000, 2001. It ranked in the top 20, earning about 10.7 million per episode. It maintained strong ratings through its second and third seasons. often in the top 20, top 30. But by the later seasons, it had dropped to half of its audience. And the final season saw even lower ratings. Now, the finale did draw 7.4 million, but it was done. It had lost more than half of its ratings, which was in 10.7. So you were looking in between 4 to 5 million. And what happens with these shows is they get more and more expensive as time goes on. And that's what happened here. So season high was in the top 20, season 2 and 3, top 30, 4 and 5. That's when it started to decline. By season 6 and 7, it was toast. It has an 8.1 rating on IMDb and across the board, so it's well-liked. It's aged well. Now, but let's compare 10.7 to other actual hit series. And there's a reason I'm comparing it. Friends, 30 million. It was always in the top five. Well, 30 million when they had special types of episodes. But it was always in the top five. ER dominated with top five rankings, sometimes hitting number one in its heyday. And in its heyday, it drew 25 to 30 million. Of course, that was early 90s. So when you compare it to that, it was really a middling show. Now, why do I say this? Well, Hollywood's creativity is gone. Hollywood's obsession with revisiting the past, like Malcolm in the Middle, with mediocre ratings, is because they're tired of losing money on new stuff that doesn't work. So they're like, let's go back to the well. This will give us a few. Now, there is nostalgia over some of these shows. But at the end of the day, it wasn't a top hit show. It shows a creativity vacuum. We're in a continuous cycle of reboots, remakes, and revivals. Shows that weren't even top rated during their original run, like Malcolm in the Middle. Again, this shows a creativity vacuum in Hollywood, my friends. I don't know. Maybe they're going to cater to a family audience, which would work. But you got Bryan Cranston, Jane Carmichael, whatever the hell her name is, two big-time leftists. I don't think so. Speaking of the cast, what have they been up to? And I put this in my notes because I really wanted to focus on Frankie Muniz. He has pretty much stepped away from acting to pursue a career in professional racing. He's been in various series such as ARCA Menard series. He's been in stock car racing in NASCAR. He announced he's going to be driving full-time in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series. I remember all of these leagues, I guess for lack of a better word, when we started producing NASCAR fantasy content. You know, so he's willing to do this. Hey, it's quick cash for him, you know. But why did he quickly give up acting for much more dangerous? This is so true about award shows. So in an interview with SiriusXM NASCAR Radio, Muniz expressed his love for racing, and he emphasized that unlike acting, where awards are subjective to opinions, who people like and don't like, racing allowed him to control his success directly through performance. When he won, nobody could say, oh, they just picked you because they liked you. He stated, quote, it's all on me when I win. It's not based on somebody else's opinion. That's what I love about racing. It's an ultimate test of your ability. And obviously, you know, and to me, that's why I like Frank Muniz. And I'm pretty sure deep down he's probably a conservative with that belief system. Nothing is given to you. It should be earned. Bryan Cranston obviously went to become a superstar in America and a pop cultural icon with his show Breaking Bad, playing the character Walter White. I saw it. It's a great series. There's one series with, I want to say Epstein. I forget his name. Salips. I can't remember. Phenomenal. He had a great role. Phenomenal, one of the best episodes in television history. You know, he's also done, you know, Trumbo, Godzilla. So he's done some things. Cash Marek, you know, she hasn't done much, you know, TV shows, the like. Some of the other cast members, the brothers, one's appeared in various TV shows and films post Malcolm in the Middle. The other one, oh, that's Christopher Masterson, Justin Burfield. He's moved into producing and behind the scenes, and Eric Per Sullivan. That's Dewey. He's pretty much retired from acting, you know? So in other words, none of them are too big to really, say no outside of Cranston, and he's willing to do it, you know? So they are open. The show on paper, at least it should be open. In terms of Disney going, can we get these guys? It's yes, we should be able to. And there you have it. I've got lots of notes here. But in essence, the revival offers a chance to reconnect with the beloved characters. And that, you know, nostalgia shows, I do like that about them. It does give us a chance to reconnect with characters that are beloved, that we love, exploring how they've evolved, how they deal with the new societal norms, and obviously the humor. So, will we have more than four episodes? Well, let's get to the first four. But I am happy for the cast and crew. It was a wholesome show for the most part. Even though it was a middling show, it's good to sit there and see a revival of something that's not so woke, you know. So let's hope they keep it non-woke and it does well. Disney Plus surely needs a hit. All right. Let us close it out with a show that I did watch quite a bit. Oh, man, I kept this up too long, huh? A show that I did watch quite a bit, and that is Blue Bloods Farewell, a heartfelt goodbye to family and legacy. Now, when I first started watching Blue Bloods, I watched it as a joke. It was a show I could make fun of, but I eventually grew to like it. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Blue Bloods, and there are tens of millions of you, this is the cast, pretty much the cast how they look today, you know. What cracks me up is that you see all that right there? Woo, that's all fake hair. Poor guy. Poor Donnie does not age very well. But that's Tom Selleck. Let's see, who are these actors? Tom Selleck, Donnie Wahlberg, Aaron Reagan, Will Estes, and Len Carew. There are quite a few other regulars and semi-regulars, and they've changed over the years, but this is the core of the show that started at the beginning and stuck with them to the end. So let me show you another picture of them in their uniforms there. And this is what the show was all about. Obviously, this is much younger, probably when it first started. Again, the core group there, Tom Selleck, Donnie Wahlberg, Bridget Moynihan, Will Estes on the far left, and Len Carew. That is a cast of Blue Bloods. It ran for 14 seasons, unheard of in today's day and age, unheard of. Well, let me get in my notes here. I apologize. It was a beloved police procedural drama. Again, on the air for 14 years. It didn't have as much in terms of what I call compelling storylines, just simple, enjoyable, old 1950s throwback fun. You know, you had the storyline that always had a good ending, a happy ending. And that, what happened? So what the show was about, it was a series that followed the Reagan family. As you can see here it was a multi-generational clan of law enforcement officers in New York City. And that's what you have, Tom Selleck, the father, the two sons, the grandfather, you know, Tom Selleck's father. And then you have the black sheep, the one who became a lawyer, Erin, the girl. So follow that family, and it became a staple on Friday night, and it was a flagship staple for CBS. And it, and by today's standards, it still had phenomenal ratings. I just told you 10 million was middling of the road. That was back in the early 2000s. Blue Bloods had about 10 million. That's phenomenal in today's day and age. But the show concluded its run despite maintaining that high fan base, those high ratings. But why? Why cancel it? The cast talked about how they were willing to take a pay cut. They did take a pay cut. Did they really give it their all to keep it from canceling? What about spinoffs? Well, let's talk about it. Serious background, the premiere run. Blue Bloods premiered September 24th, 2010. See, so 4 or 5 years after Malcolm in the Middle. But remember, Malcolm in the Middle was doing 5 million. Pop. This premiered in 2010, and I think it had like 13 million viewers. So it started September 24th, 2010, concluded December 13th, 2024. 293 episodes, 14 seasons. I got to be honest. I would have begged and fought the commission 7 more to hit that 300 mark. So again, it follows the Reagan family, a multi-generational family of law enforcement officers. The main characters include New York PD Commissioner Frank Reagan, Detective Danny Reagan, which is Donnie Wahlberg, Assistant District Attorney Aaron Reagan, Bridget Moynihan, Sergeant Jamie Reagan Will Estes. And Len Carew was the grandfather who was like the guiding light for the family. You always talked to him. His scenes were more supporting. Of course, he did have a handful of, he would always have one or two shows a season that would focus on his character. The ratings, start to finish, it was a hit. Blue Bloods consistently performed well. Its first show had 13 million viewers. Over the years, it maintained a strong viewership. The final episode drew 10.5 million. Again, in this day and age of fragmented television, with streaming to compete with, 10.5 million is phenomenal. So the cancellation reasons, despite high ratings, Blue Bloods was expensive. It was done in New York City. They don't give a break to anybody. This cast, very, very expensive to pay that cast. CBS, in order to save money, decided to shift its programming strategy towards cost-effective, non-scripted shows, and the scripted shows that were new were much cheaper to produce. And that led to the cancellation of Blue Bloods. They talk about the strike in 2023, and I get that, but that's just a blip on the screen. The cast did try to save the show. They took a 25% pay cut to secure the 14th season, but that wasn't enough because of the production costs. You know, and they were vocal about it. Selleck criticized CBS for ending the show despite strong ratings and loyal fan base. Now, I don't fault these people for what they earn. I do not. But when I look at the rest of America, the average Joe, what they make, they took a 25% pay cut. So with their pay cut, Tom Selleck was earning $200,000 per episode. 10 episodes, he made $4 million this year. Donnie Wahlberg, $150,000 per episode. Bridget Moynihan, $100,000. Per episode. Will Estes, $100,000 per episode. Len Carew, $100,000 per episode. Tom Selleck's earning about $270,000 per episode. Donnie Wahlberg, $200,000 without the pay cuts. So you see what I'm saying? I mean, what's that? That's over $4 million he's earning a year. So did they really work that hard? Or were their egos could only go so low? I say the latter, but I don't fault them. But they could have gone much lower with those salaries, but they have lives they want to maintain, or I'm sorry, they have lifestyles they want to maintain. I get it. So I don't fault them, but don't tell me you truly wanted to save the show and you're still earning 200 G's. You know, moving to LA or moving to a city that's cheaper, fly out to New York to shoot a few scenes here or there, like NYPD Blue did. Get those costs down. They weren't willing to do that. So the series finale was entitled End of Tour, featured a dramatic conclusion, and somebody does die, and it's a cop, and it's funny because the first thing I thought is, man, that person who plays in that role always dies. It did receive positive reviews. Critics praised the show for staying true to its themes. And here's the thing about the show. The show always had a dinner scene with the family. That's what I loved about it. In our fantasy world, we all sit down every single day to dinner. Back in the 70s, that used to be the case with us. The 80s started to drift off. 90s is non-existent in America. Spinoffs. Yes, there has been talk of potential spinoffs, but nothing has been stated in terms of what's actually going to be spun off. Donnie Wahlberg has said, hey, I want a spinoff. You know, Tom Selleck, I want a spinoff. They're all open to spinoffs. So in regards to their pay cut, though, I put in my notes, you know, their pay cut was similar to how Rachel Maddow took a pay cut and took the hit for MSNBC by going from $30 million to $25 million a year. That's kind of how I view their pay cuts. So the final episode, I give an A for entertainment and a D in realism, which was my normal rating of their show. And it's typical of a Blue Bloods episode. But it did provide a fitting and emotional conclusion, ensuring that Blue Bloods will be remembered. And the final scene had all the cast members there in terms of the family. It had the five main cast members I talked about. It had the female DA, assistant DA, Aaron's ex there. It had the two sons of Donnie Wahlberg's characters, two sons, and it had Aaron's daughter there. These kids had grown up, so they had left the show to pursue other acting or college. So it was nice to see all of that. And I enjoyed it. I'm not gonna lie. It's a silly little show, but it was a lot of fun to watch. It was just an escape from reality into a fantasy we know does not exist, will not exist, but we wish did, where the good guys always win and the right decisions are made and people are honorable from the get-go to the end. And there you have it, my friends. Another great episode. Well, if I say so myself. Like I said in the beginning, do not forget to like and share this podcast. Do not forget to subscribe to our podcast at our various social media outlets such as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, under the profile handle Grumblings Media. You can also find these podcasts and other content at grumblingsmedia.com. Thank you for tuning in, my friends. I am William Del Pilar, and until next time, I bid you adieu.